हरि ओम ओम भूर्भुवस्व तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। ओम मे वी मेडिटेट on that Supreme Being who dwells in the hearts of all, who is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in every way. ॐ शांति 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 पीस पीस पीस। वी हैव बीन स्टडिंग द विवेक चूड़ामणि और क्रेस्ट ज्वेल ऑफ डिस्क्रिमिनेशन एज प्रोपाउंडेड बाय द ग्रेट सियर फिलोसोफर शंकर। This is a treatise on non-dualistic Vedanta. It brings out this truth that God, what you call God or Brahman or reality or divinity, is not something to be found outside of yourself, but is within you. When again you find Him within yourself, then you find Him everywhere. And so it comes to the final conclusion that the Atman, the true self, Atman in Sanskrit may mean I am. That Atman is the same as Brahman or God. Now before we go into it further, let me point out again one thing, that this is a truth not peculiar to Vedanta. In fact, this is the truth taught by every religion. Take for instance, you are familiar with the teachings of the Bible. Christ insists again and again that kingdom of God is within. You see, it's a low here, low there, and at long last you have to find out that that kingdom is within yourself. Then again he said, I and my Father are one. Now, of course, one may say, but that was Jesus who said that. He was God. True. But it was not Christ alone. All the mystics, all the great ones who had attained the supreme knowledge, the supreme wisdom, they found that divinity within. They realized their oneness with Brahman, with God. You take the Sufi mystics, they say, Anal Haq, I am He. Then you take what we learn in the Upanishads, that Thou art, or I am Brahman, or I am the pure consciousness. It's very interesting that these well-known Christian mystics, like St. John of the Cross or Meister Eckhart, they realize that oneness, they realize that divinity within. But here again, you see, it is interesting this way, that they would not admit that originally it is one with the divine. They say through the grace of Christ, the soul was transformed into divinity. Good, we have nothing to object to that. When they realize that that is one with God. So it is through the grace of Christ that it was transformed, or whether it was originally such and they discovered it, that's a matter of semantics, language. The truth is there. But of course, a logician would point out, now look here, if you say soul was not divine, but it was transformed through the grace of God, then I say the grace of God has to destroy the soul. You see, to destroy the nature of something and transform the nature into something is to make it something completely different. For instance, the nature of the heat, nature of the fire is to give heat. You destroy that nature, what remains? It's no longer fire, it's something else. So it doesn't stand to reason. And so here is the bold truth brought out. The Atman is Brahman. And the fact is, what my master had said, he who finds him here will find him everywhere. He who does not find him here will find him nowhere. You have to realize that. But you see, simply stating that Atman is Brahman or I am Brahman does not help you. And that is why this treatise, it brings out this idea that do not mistake this Atman, this I, to be what you consider yourself to be. In other words, there is that analysis first. And in this analysis, this great teacher points out, following the teachings of the Upanishads, of course, that the Atman, the true being within us, that is one with God, is covered by so many sheaths. And we are identifying the Atman with any of these sheaths. And that is ignorance. So if you consider, when you learn I am Brahman, well, then this body, yeah. No. It's a sheath, physical sheath. When the body gets sick and you say, I am sick, now, how can divinity become sick? It's beyond health and sickness. Or when you say, the moods of the mind, oh, I feel so miserable. And the feeling comes. And where is that feeling? In the mind. And you are identifying yourself with the mind. And so he points out that there are different sheaths. And none of these, as long as the Atman is identified with all these, you don't know what that Atman is. And so you have to first hear about this truth, but don't think you have understood it. Then reason upon it. What is that divinity? That divinity, that Atman, must be something that is eternal, unchangeable. Anything that changes, you know, is subject to decay, death, annihilation. But there is something within us that does not die, is eternal, that is unchangeable, and it is in our consciousness. You know, everyone has this consciousness, this feeling. You see, this body is changing, our character is changing, our mind is changing, our discriminating faculty is changing, and yet, there is this sense, this consciousness, I am I. Now try to find that I. And that unchangeable reality. So, you see, there is no mistaking that to say I am Brahman and so I am Brahman any that I know myself to be. No, I do not know yet what I am. There was a great teacher in India in recent years. And one particular point, you see, he was a non-dualist through and through.
And one point he emphasized is this. You see, anybody coming to enquire, his name is Raman Maharshi, perhaps you have all heard about him and read some of his teachings. Yes, very good, wonderful. And whenever anybody comes to ask him anything, he answers this way. Find out who is enquiring this. You see. Find out who is it that is questioning this. In other words, you see, our whole world, each one's world, is centered around I. And yet, the enquiry does not arise, what this I am. Of course, ordinarily, perhaps the enquiry would come, what is God? And then we all go to seek God somewhere outside, or in books, or in churches, or in temples. And at long last, we end by finding him within ourselves. I am he. But as I said, it is not so easy. We always misunderstand. And so always discriminate. And the truth that's brought out, you will find, it says, you have to hear about this truth, reason upon this truth, and meditate upon it. And then, by transcending the limitations of your mind, and by transcending the limitations of your mind again means this simple truth, by purifying your mind. You know, some time back we are reading the Inspired Talks of Vivekananda. And there was this wonderful truth brought out. He said, if all the scriptures are lost, and if there is just one sentence that Christ had uttered, if that lives, religion lives. And what is that? Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. That is the point. Purity of the heart. Purity of the heart is purity of the mind. And when the mind becomes pure, the truth of God becomes revealed. In other words, the Atman becomes revealed to you. You see, take for instance, the mind is conscious, apparently. And that consciousness is a reflection of the pure consciousness. And where is that pure consciousness? And whose is that pure consciousness? God's. Now that God is not way above there and reflecting upon the mind. No, it's within. And that consciousness reflected upon the mind makes you conscious. Makes you see, sense objects and things. And so we have already seen that how the physical body cannot be the Atman. It's a sheath that is encasing the Atman. Then again it has been pointed out how the vital breath is not the Atman. And also we have studied how the mind is not the Atman. And now again, what we have already read about the mind, I shall again read out to you to remind you so that we can go to the next lesson. It says, ignorance is nowhere except in the mind. The mind is filled with ignorance, and this causes the bondage of birth and death. You see, the Atman, the Self, is neither birth nor death. Unchangeable reality, that's the eternal truth, that's the immortal Self. And as and when and as long as we identify ourselves with this body, there is a fear of death. And, of course, you know, again, you see, through ignorance. I know, when I first came to this country, I met one very old woman. I was told that she met Vivekananda, so I went to visit her. And as I went to her, she said, she has found something higher than Vedanta. I said, oh, what is it? Oh, there's a teacher in Los Angeles teaching that millions now living will never die. And so she went to this teacher and she said how to immortalize the body. And you know, I saw a bump in her face there. I thought, oh my God, if I have to keep that body immortalized, what fun it would be. And then, of course, after 10 days, she was gone. So you see, these teachers are very safe in this way. As long as they are living, they can teach. And when they are dead, nobody can accuse them. So, the body, as long as we identify ourselves with the body, but body, you see, grows, born, grows, dies, decays, and dies. That is the lot of the body. Everything that we sense or perceive in this world through our senses, they are subject to birth and death. But the Atman within us, that's the immortal self. And when we know that immortal self, we are free, we realize ourselves one with Brahman, blissful, all-loving, and immortal. And where is this ignorance? What causes this bondage? Ignorance. Through ignorance, identifying ourselves with that which is not the Atman. So where is this ignorance? It's in the mind. When in the enlightenment of the Atman, a man transcends the mind, the phenomenal universe disappears from him. You see, what we consider this as so real. When the truth becomes known, this is not the same. What we sense or perceive as real, that disappears. Then what do we sense? What do we realize then? This is Brahman. Everything is Brahman. And instead of seeing the Brahman, we are seeing this manifold universe. There's a truth brought out by Vivekananda. He says, he who sees the one in the many sees the truth. But you see, we are seeing the manifold universe. We are seeing you as different from one another. But no. I am the same self in every one of you. You know, there was a teacher who came to this country from India, and he used to address beautifully. He would say, my own self in the forms of ladies and gentlemen. That is the truth. It's myself. And I am in the sun, I am in the moon, I am everywhere. I pervade this universe. That's the Atman. Not the one that is identifying with this little man. And that self we have to realize. And that is God. And Sri Ramakrishna used to say, it is so easy for every one of us to realize God, or to realize this self. Because we live, move and have our being in that all the time. It's not far away from us any time. Every moment of our life we live in him. But our mind is not there. Our mind is somewhere else. So he says, when a man lives in the domain of mental ignorance, the phenomenal universe exists for him. Now in dream, the mind is emptied of the objective universe, but it creates by its own power a complete universe of subject and object. The waking state is only a prolonged dream. the phenomenal universe exists in the mind. In dreamless sleep, when the mind does not function, nothing exists. This is our universal experience. Man seems to be in bondage to birth and death. This is a fictitious creation of the mind, not a reality. That's not the truth. The wind collects the clouds, and the wind drives them away again. Mind creates bondage, and mind also removes bondage. So that is the most important thing to learn, that our mind has to be trained. The mind creates attachment to the body and the things of the world. Thus it binds a man as a beast is tied by rope. But it is also the mind again which creates in a man an utter distaste for sense objects as if for poison. Thus it frees him from his bondage. In other words, the mind attaches itself to the objects and creates bondage. The mind detaches itself from this objective universe, attaches itself to God or the Atman, and attains the blissful consciousness. The mind, therefore, is the cause of man's bondage and also of his liberation. It causes the bondage when it is darkened by rajas. Rajas means when there is that craving and desire and for objects and things. It causes liberation when it is freed from rajas and tamas and made pure. So, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Now, of course, you see that purity again means the mind is completely free from any other craving, any other desire. And when does it become free from all craving and desire? When it finds something greater, something higher. And that in God, in the Atman. If discrimination and dispassion are practiced to the exclusion of everything else, the mind will become pure and move toward liberation. You see, discrimination. What is this discrimination? To discriminate between that which is eternal and non-eternal. You see, and as you discriminate, there would arise dispassion for that which is non-eternal. You know, whenever any craving or desire comes, all right, if you can't help it, go ahead. But know that that is only for the moment. Sometimes one has to go through experiences in life. But with discrimination, if you do it, you come out of it easily. But if you consider that as the be-all and purpose of life and existence, of course, other chances, more chances will be given. No doubt, none will be lost. Because your true nature, that will always remain pure. If discrimination and dispassion are practiced to the exclusion of everything else, the mind will become pure and move towards liberation. Therefore, the wise man who seeks liberation must develop both these qualities within himself. The terrible tiger called an impure mind prowls in the forest of sense objects. The wise man who seeks liberation must not go there. Now there is a beautiful truth in the Upanishads also connected with that. It says, good and pleasant, these are the two things that present themselves to us. He who chooses the good realizes the purpose of life. And so we need that discrimination. Is it good? Does it lead me to knowledge, wisdom? Does it lead me to God? Does it lead me to freedom? And choose accordingly. Even if you cannot, but know that what you are seeking now for the moment. Detach yourself. The mind of the experiencer creates all the objects which he experiences, while in the waking or in the dreaming state. You see, where is really, you think that you can find pleasure in the senses, but that pleasure also you are creating in your mind. It's not in the object itself, because of the fact that the same object that is giving you pleasure today and this moment, next moment it doesn't give you pleasure, it gives you pain. So where is it? It's in your own mind you are creating that pleasure. It's just like a dog, you have seen how the dog chews the dry bone, and the dog thinks it's getting much juice out of this bone, But what is that juice? His own saliva and blood coming out of his own teeth. And he's taking that and having a good pleasure, good enjoyment out of it, okay, for the dog. And it's the same thing. It's not in the objects. It is, and then again as you go to reflect, that it is the Atman, the source of joy. And this is only a reflection of that, a shadow. So, have dispassion, discrimination, turn towards the reality, the source of joy, the source of pleasure, the source of bliss. And that is in the Atman, that is in God. The mind of the experiencer creates all the objects which he experiences, while in the waking or in the dreaming states. Ceaselessly it creates the differences in men's bodies, color, social condition and race. You see, these are all through ignorance. And just creating from our own mind, prejudices, things like that. Where are prejudices? In the mind. It creates the variations of the gunas. It creates desires, actions and the fruits of actions. And we remain bound by the law of karma. Man is pure spirit in his true being. Free from attachment, the mind deludes him. It binds him with the bonds of the body, the sense organs and the life breath. It creates in him the sense of I and mine, this little I, this little mine, this belongs to me. See, that's bondage. So you see, that I, that me and mine has nothing to do with the Atman, with the true I. It makes him wander endlessly among the fruits of the actions it has caused. The error of identifying Atman with non-Atman is the cause of man's birth, death and rebirth. The false identification is created by the mind. Therefore, it is the mind that causes the misery of birth, death and rebirth. For the man who has no discrimination and is tainted by rajas and tamas. Therefore, the wise who know reality have declared that the mind is full of ignorance. Because of this ignorance, all the creatures of the universe are swept helplessly hither and thither like masses of cloud before the wind. Therefore, the seeker after liberation must work carefully to purify the mind. When the mind has been made pure, liberation is as easy to grasp as the fruit which lies in the palm of your hand. Because you are free already. Only this bondage is just for the moment, through the ignorance of the mind. Train your mind and you attain liberation. It is just like the fruit in the palm of your hand. You have it already there. Wake up. Seek earnestly for liberation. And your lust for sense objects will be rooted out. Practice detachment. Have faith in the reality. Devote yourself to the practice of spiritual disciplines such as hearing the word of Brahman, reasoning and meditating upon it. Thus the mind will be freed from the evil of rajas. The mental covering, therefore, cannot be the Atman. It has a beginning and an end and is subject to change. It is the abode of pain, is an object of experience. This seer cannot be the thing which is seen. Here's a question already. Is the Zen Buddhist thought similar to the non-dualistic Vedanta? Yes, Zen Buddhism in its pure aspect is such, same as non-dualistic Vedanta. But of course, you see, here is a trouble. Not with Zen Buddhism. You see, if you go to the real Zens, Zen teachers, they teach you the right truth. But in America, you know, when you read some of these or hear some of these Americans preaching Zen Buddhism and saying that you don't have to practice anything, you are that, they're confusing people. You know, one time I met Dr. Suzuki, you know, he's a great teacher on Zen Buddhism. And I asked him, do you believe in the practice of control and self-control and meditation? He said, of course we do, that's the very essence of our teaching. Then I said, your disciple so-and-so doesn't believe in all that. And his answer was, I wish I could burn all my books. Because, you know, his disciples means these people reading his books get the wrong understanding of the whole thing. Now, may I invite questions from you?
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording.
Now ask something.
Swami, if you tell me that I am the Atman, and I believe you absolutely, why don't I realize it immediately?
If you believe me absolutely, what is it you are believing?
Your words?
The word is not the truth. The spirit of the word. And in order that you can understand the spirit of the word, you have to reason upon that and meditate upon it and realize for yourself.
No. But you are always telling us it is so easy.
No, you see, don't you know that story in the Upanishads, which I have often quoted to you? Two men, the king of the gods and the king of the demons, learn that if one knows the truth of the Atman, one gets everything. And so they approached a great teacher. And this teacher told them that thou art, you are Brahman. Now the king of the demons, the teacher said, go and look yourself on lake, on water, and study your reflection. So they come and say, yes, we saw ourselves, you know, nails and hair, even they didn't have any mirror at the time. And so is that the Atman? Well, he remained silent. The king of demons went away thinking that it's the Atman. And so he went and preached to the demons that worship the body, put rouge and powder and take good care of your body. And this body, it's not that you don't have to take care of your body, but this body is the Atman, this body is to be worshipped. The king of the gods went a certain distance and thought, now, what is this business? This body is not eternal. The Atman is something that is eternal, that is unchangeable. This body is subject to change. So he comes back and he says, I see no good in this teaching. Again the teacher said, thou art that. Just analyze your dreams. So he thought the dream self is the Atman, because detached from the body. But then he began to argue within himself, but if that is the Atman, what good is that? In dreams sometimes I am happy, sometimes I am miserable. And so what good is that? So he comes back and says, no, I don't like this. Then he says, go and analyze deep sleep. So of course there is no trouble, no misery. It was wonderful in a way. But then he comes back and says, but I'm unconscious. What good is that? Then he pointed out the truth. You have to go beyond this waking and dreaming and dreamless sleep. Through the practice of meditation, reach that transcendental consciousness, then you realize the Atman. Okay. So if you simply believe you are Brahman, it doesn't help you. we have to realize.
What are the ways to purify the mind?
Ways to purify the mind. That's what we have been trying to practice and we have been trying to teach. The ways are karma yoga, for instance. To live in the world and work, but be not attached. Let the work be worship. Then also, learn to be devoted to God. God who is within, be devoted, which means again, give your mind to Him. Learn to love Him. Also, discriminate. You see, these are the ways and means. Chant the name of the Lord to keep your mind in God. You see, these are the different ways and methods by which you keep your mind to God. Give your mind to God, you realize God. Your mind becomes pure and the truth becomes revealed. That is a simple truth, as I quoted, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So that purity is achieved through our, I use the word, being diluted in God. You see, you become so absorbed and so much thinking of God that your this Mrs. So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so is all diluted in that. You see, that is the way.
If the mind is the ignorant part that stands in the way, and then we created ourselves, are the affections which want no return, is that part of the Atman or still part of the mind?
That is of the mind, you know. Atman has no part. Atman is infinite. Atman is eternal. It has no part. It is, no. But the mind's affection, mind's love, you see, and mind's love for the Atman or God, mind's affection for God, those are the ways and means by which we attain the knowledge, the realization of the Atman.
That's not part of the illusion?
No. Illusion is not love or affection. Illusion, there is not illusion exactly, but you see, that which makes us forget God is ignorance. That which makes us remember God is good, is knowledge. So that's not illusion.
When do the attachments between people become divine, and when are they still personal?
Very good. You see, first let me quote to you Swami Vivekananda. He said, renounce. Does that mean that you take your husband and drown him in the ocean? What is renunciation? The attachment to me and mine. Now, what does it mean again? To see, that is brought out in the teachings of the Upanishads. Let me quote to you. This great sage Jagavalka is going to retire from the world and devote himself to contemplation of God in his old age. And so he gave away all his wealth to his wife and was about to leave. When his wife comes and accosts him and says, "Now, you gave me this wealth, but you are going away. Tell me, will this wealth give me immortality?" And then Jagavalka said, "Maitreyi," that was the name of his wife, "you have been very dear to me, but you have become dearer now, having asked that question." Then he said, "This wealth would not give you immortality. It will make you happy, You may get things what you desire through this wealth. But now I shall tell you the secret of immortality. Then he taught this truth to her. The husband loves the wife not for the sake of the wife, but for the sake of the divine self that is in the wife. The wife loves the husband not for the sake of the husband, but for the sake of that divine self that dwells in the husband. The son loves the father not for the sake of the father, but for the sake of the divine self that is in the father. Thus he goes on. In other words, the real attraction that we have, personal attraction, is really the attraction towards God. But because we do not realize that, so it becomes an attachment. Now, it becomes divine when you learn to see God in the another and begin to love God in that person. Is that clear and simple?
In other words, when you recognize the divine in yourself, it is responding to the divine in another?
Yes. When you see God within yourself, you must learn also to see God in others. And that is the fact, that is the truth. And then have that love, that attraction. Then there's no sense of me and mine, don't you see? Then you will not learn, you will not try to possess your husband. That sense of me and mine, that is the cause of misery. Om Hari Om, Om Sahana Bhavato, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahavīryaṁ karavāvahai, tejasvīnāvadhītamastu, mā vidviṣāvahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. May Brahman protect us. May he guide us. May he give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace.